Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to season two of the 147 podcast with me, Sports MC Phil Seymour, and him, the reigning Players and Tour champion and former champion of the world, the magician, Sean Murphy. And this week, the 147 Snooker podcast is coming live from Leicester. Sean, we're actually in the same room.
Greetings. It's great to see you.
It's great to see you too. It's been a quiet few weeks in the snooker world.
Is this our first podcast of 2024?
It is. Happy New Year.
Well, Happy New Year to you, Evan, and everyone else. Season's Absolutely. Greetings. Are you still feeling festive?
I'm doing dry January, mate. I'm feeling miserable.
Oh, no.
We talked about it last year on the podcast. I do it every year. Oh, this year, for some reason.
Why do you do it?
It's a reset for me.
Is it?
It's a nice reset. We all get fat at Christmas, or fatter at Christmas. Me, probably more than most people. And I use dry January as a bit of a reset. I get back into my running, which I have done. I try and get the diet a bit better. I'm finding it tough this year, really tough. I've got to say, though, a thank you to Alfie Burden for keeping me honest on the running. AB is checking in with me on Twitter every now and then. He's doing it himself, doing a bit of running and making sure I am too, which I appreciate that. So thank you, Alfie. But yeah, dry January, it's not nice. So you won't be doing dry January.
No, I'm not doing dry January. But I have only had a couple of drinks this year because I decided I wasn't going to drink at all in the run-up to the Masters or during the Masters whilst I was still in it. And then, of course, when I lost in the semis, you know, a few friends and family stuff, we went out for a few drinks that night. But apart from that, no alcohol has crossed thy lips.
Well, of course, last year I went to the Masters to watch your game against Neil Robertson, and I was very, very kindly given tickets to the Century Club, which was free food and drink.
Oh, I remember this.
And I was doing dry January then, and it absolutely killed me to sit there.
Absolute waster.
Oh, you walk into that room and they put a glass of champagne in your hand, which normally I would have both hands out to fill both of them with champagne. And no, I couldn't, and I didn't. And yeah, not easy. So listen, that's what it is. But it's been a great start to 2024.
Do you find when you deprive yourself of something or you have your reset or whatever you do, you know, one of these things that, you know, you'd find yourself in situations where, you know, someone's trying to thrust alcohol on you. Have you found it? Do you think you're just more sensitive to it because you're trying to avoid it?
Probably more sensitive. I had a decent break for Christmas. I had a few weeks off and I started working again last week and I spent most of the week up in Scotland. And every hotel I was at, I stayed at four different hotels.
They don't like a drink up there.
No, they hate a drink in Scotland. And every hotel I was at seemed to have a free lounge with free alcohol, with free food. And I'm sat there drinking my Diet Coke or Diet Pepsi or whatever, looking at the bottles of Peroni chilling in the fridge and thinking, oh, what I'd give one of those right now. But I didn't. And I'm quite proud of that fact, actually. I didn't. So I didn't cave. And
it takes some willpower, that, doesn't it?
Yeah, we all drink a bit too much. So when you live on the road, you do, and it's very easy to. And I think it's, I use this as a bit of a reset. And then as I go into February, I won't be doing what I did in December and November. I'll scale it right back. So I don't know. It works for me. It doesn't work for everyone. It works for me. But what a great start to 2024. We're going to talk about the Masters in a minute. Of course, the World Grand Prix, the Spreadex World Grand Prix, is currently ongoing, which is why we're both here in Leicester. But before we do, just to say a big thank you to everybody that's voted for us in the Sports Podcast Awards 2024. We felt very, very honoured to be shortlisted or put through to the final of that in the Sports Talk Award. We're up against some big old names in broadcasting, the likes of Ian Wright, Nick Luck, Simon Jordan, and people like that. But for everyone that's voted, thank you. Keep voting for us. It is a public vote. We add on to the last 12. We really appreciate that. We've put loads of messages out there. If you haven't done yet, pop on our social media at 147pod everywhere. You'll see links to it. Get on there. Vote for us if you can. A vote for us is a vote for Snooker, Sean, isn't it?
Well, Snooker will be the winner.
Snooker will be the winner.
I think it's important just to make the point. I've made this tongue-in-cheek a couple of times, but it's a serious point, I think. All of these other people that we're up against, and here's the competitive Sean Murphy coming out for a moment, you know, it's not the taking part. It is about winning. Don't believe all that crap. It's not about taking part. In all seriousness, though, a lot of these podcasts, if not all of the ones that we are up against in these awards, are part of big machines. They've got big support networks, teams and teams of people, big, marketing budgets and big studios. With ours, it's you and me.
Well, we're sat in a hotel room in Leicester right now. We're not in a studio. Yes, I've got some very fancy podcasting gear, which happens to be mine, but yeah, it is just us.
It's us.
And we record it live, that we don't edit. We don't cut things out. We don't chop and change things. We record 1 hour roughly of content, and that hour just gets posted straight after we finish recording it. So,
yeah, and I think as well, like when people interact with our accounts on socials, when people write into us, when people get in touch on Twitter, on Instagram, or sorry, X, or our Facebook page, or whatever it might be, it's us that they're talking to.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not a PA or somebody working for us or somebody collecting information. It's us, isn't it?
Right.
And
sorry,
of course, when I say us. Of course, I mean you. But I think because that's important. You write into a lot of these other pods and these other shows. You're not actually talking to the presenters or the people who are doing it. And I think that's one of the things when people have fed back to me when I've done my shows around the country. You get so many people now, and it's so lovely. People are really kind. They come and say, oh, love the podcast. And I think one of the things that comes through is people really like the fact that they are interacting with us.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's direct. It comes from us, the horse's mouth, unfiltered. Some would say it should be filtered.
Well, yeah.
And the podcast will start any minute, guys, just before we go any further.
Yeah, we do promise. But look, I think voting closes about a week and a half. So if you haven't voted yet, please do vote for us if you could. We really appreciate it. Now, the power of podcasting. We've got to mention Shed 7 here, because... Oh. A few months ago, Rick Witter, the singer from Shed 7, came on the podcast, massive snooker fan, is Rick, came on the podcast talking about his love of snooker, talking about indie music and everything else. He then tapped us up for tickets for the UK Championship in York, as we fully expected he would do, and he went to that. But the BBC, of course, cottoned onto this, used a Shed 7 track, Talk of the Town, as the opener and the closer for the final of the UK Championship. You interviewed Rick live on the BBC on that. And last week, we are absolutely delighted to congratulate Shed 7 on their first ever number one album, which 30 years after they started in the business.
I found that hard to believe. I couldn't believe that when I saw that.
30 years after they started in the business. Well, I remember them as my school band because they were Broccoli Haven before they were Shed 7. So when I was 12, 13, they were going then.
Was that before Decimalization?
No, it was pre-sliced bread, though.
Right.
It was just before sliced bread.
Jeez, they must have been good.
Yeah, they were great, yeah. But no, Shed 7. So, I mean, we can't take all the credit.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, I'm not, I, you know, is it? It's not all down to our podcast.
It's not all down to us, but I think we can take most of the credit.
What colour yacht are you buying?
Well, I'm not sure. We need to talk to Rick about royalties.
Are we getting like a 40-footer, a 50-footer, did we say?
Sorry, we? Do we not get one each?
Yeah, no, pairs. We're going to have them all together. Yeah. Did you not get that text from Rick about did we want to share that berth in Monaco with him?
So share a berth with it. Oh, sorry, a boat berth.
Yes,
yes. We're not going to live births. That would be frightening.
We've strayed into a strange area, ladies and gentlemen.
But I will be going to watch Shed 7 in summer in the Museum Gardens in York. So he's very kindly invited us to that. I'll certainly be going, whether you can or not, I don't know. But yeah, well done, Shed 7. That
absolutely
is
absolutely fantastic.
Amazing. Number one album. Fantastic. But,
one other big piece of news as we start the year. And a huge, huge congratulations must go to Hazel Irving, MBE.
And how's it taken this long?
Well,
like, seriously. I mean, you know, Hazel is one of the finest, not even sports broadcasters, one of the finest broadcasters this country has
in the
got.
World.
Yeah, in the world, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Certainly one of the true greats in sports broadcasting. So, yeah, well done, Hazel. That is absolutely thoroughly deserved. Away from the cameras as well, she couldn't be more lovely, could she? I mean, she is like, she is just wonderful.
You know, they talk about, you know, you should never meet your heroes and all stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like Hazel, I've been very lucky to get to know Hazel over the years. We actually made our debut at the Crucible the same year.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she started working at the World Championships at the Crucible the same year I made my debut. So we've kind of, you know, quite nicely almost gone on that journey together.
Yeah.
And she's possibly lovelier in real life.
Yeah.
She's such a nice lady. But in terms of her work, just for a second, her professionalism and one of the things that makes her so good at her job as the anchor for the BBC Snooker is her passion and her love for snooker.
Yes.
And she doesn't have to fake that. She doesn't have to read through. Now, she does have reams of notes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Her research and the things that she puts into it. But she doesn't have runners doing it for her. She doesn't have people that... She has all her own research and notes. And because she knows it backwards and follows the sport when she's not working on it, her knowledge of it's actually genuine. And she's able to link from A to B, from table one to table two and throw to this. And because she knows the sport inside and out.
Yeah.
And she is an absolute machine at it. And she is a wonderful, wonderful broadcaster. An even nicer lady.
Yeah.
And it's been a real privilege to know her all these years. And now as I've sort of set foot into that world, working with her, watching how she does it, there is nobody better.
No, she's one of those people. She's got time. If you look at the best footballers, okay, you look at Cristiano Ronaldo, you look at Messi, you look at the best, and they have time. Well, one thing they have all the time is an abundance of time. So they get on the ball, they're not rushed. It's almost like the game slows down and they've got time to do what they want to do. Hazel Irving has time. You look at her broadcasting, she's never flustered. She's never, rushing on to the next thing. There's never any of that. She's got time and she's got that almost grace as well when she's doing it, that there's no rushing. It's just all at a nice pace because she's so comfortable, because she's so prepared and planned and experienced and involved in it all. We are lucky though, aren't we? We're very fortunate in snooker. I was thinking about this actually when Hazel got the MBE. We've got Hazel obviously on BBC who's brilliant. We've got Jill Douglas on ITV who again is superb at what she does. Whether some of that actually comes from Hazel, possibly. And then Rachel Casey on Eurosport. Rachel stepped up into that role when Andy Goldstein, at very short notice, by the way, came away from it, and Rachel went from reporter to presenter. The way Rachel's grown into that role, for me, is tremendous. I think she does a wonderful job. And like you say with Hazel, because she is a fan, she understands the sport. I just think we're very, very lucky that our three main anchors that we've got are all very, very good at what they do. But Hazel, yeah, MBE, thoroughly well-deserved. Can't believe she's not had it before now, to be honest. But could you imagine the BBC coverage without Hazel?
It's just, it's mad, isn't it? I, as I say, I remember meeting her in 2002 at the Crucible, being introduced to her, I'm pretty sure that she replaced David Vine directly.
Yeah, that's right. I think so. Yeah.
Although I know a few others. You know, I remember Doogie Donnelly presented and Ray Stubbs presented. I'm not sure if she followed David Vine absolutely immediately. I'm not sure, but you know, what shoes to fill?
Oh.
And she stepped into it absolutely seamlessly. I can assure you, her debut at the Crucible was way better than my debut at the Crucible. I can assure you of that 100%.
Yeah.
An incredible broadcaster, a lovely lady, and Hazel, from us at the 147 podcast, a huge congratulations on your honour.
Absolutely, yeah, 100%. Now, the Masters then. So let's talk about it. Firstly, what a tournament. What a showpiece for snooker as a whole. The viewing figures have been fantastic. The viewing figures for the darts over Christmas were ridiculous, thanks to Luke Littler and everything else around that.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah, isn't it just... The viewing figures for snooker, though, for the Masters, were tremendous. I mean, they were fantastic, and they've gone way above anything it's done previously. And it was a great tournament, wasn't it?
That event seems to get bigger and bigger. And I think, you know, WST take the odd hit here and there with events. And, of course, we've the same, you know, constant talks about events moving and identities for events. But certainly the Triple Crown events and the Masters just seem to grow year on year. And, of course, you know, on your own little personal Facebook pages, you know, you got your memories, and it's this time, you know, all my Facebook memories around January are all Masters related. And you can see all the pictures from the first time we were at Ali Pali. And the event looks so different, the way it's dressed and the sets changed, the digi set, the Century Club, all of the backstage areas of and all of that stuff. You can just see how the event has grown and gone from strength to strength. It is now one of the biggest events, sporting events, in the world. You know, I rank it wherever you want, but it's right up there, certainly in the UK. I'm already looking forward to going back next year. You know, it's a fabulous, fabulous tournament. Just the best players in the world. Every single match could be a final.
Yeah.
I know it's cliche to say that, but it is true.
Yeah. Cliches only become cliches because they're true as a rule. And you're right. We gave away some tickets on social media, and we know.
Did the other podcasts do anything like that?
No, I don't think they did.
No.
I don't think they did.
So are we the only podcast that gave away tickets to the Masters?
Oh, let's not start that, because there's one podcast that could give away all sorts of things, let's be honest. But no, we know. You know, the guys that did go enjoyed themselves, because they've posted it on social media. So thank you for getting involved. Thanks to everyone that entered the competitions. We were just lucky. Sean had a few spare tickets, and he said, look, let's give them away on the podcast social. So look, if you're not following us, follow us at 147pod across all forms of social media. Occasionally, we will give away tickets on there. So get on there. Now, Ronnie won his 8th record-breaking Masters title. It's getting a bit ridiculous now, isn't it, really?
It's bonkers.
It's, you know, the form he's got at the same age as me at 48 is, it just seems mad, Sean. He's still able to do it, still able to pull it out when it really matters. Obviously, you played him in the semi-finals. You know, in fact, before we get on to Ronnie, let's just talk about that, because you were a talking point during the Masters this year with, once again, people criticising the fact that you were broadcasting as well, which, by the way, so was Mark Allen. Mark Allen was doing commentary and different things during the tournament, whilst playing the tournament. I think the one big thing people questioned was whether you should have been in the studio until about 12:30 or whatever it was, the night before you were playing in a semi-final. Some of your fellow pros, Mark Williams in particular, I think, took to Twitter to criticise that choice, or to question that choice, let's say. I'm finding it a bit tiresome.
You're finding it tiresome?
I just think it's getting boring, to be honest. You addressed this before. You've talked about this before, and I just think it's a bit lazy that people just trot out the same thing when they know in advance you're going to be doing it. You reached the semi-finals of the Masters. You reached the semi-finals. How many players in their careers would give their right arm just to reach the semi-finals of the Masters once? Just to get there once and reach the semi-finals. How many of them would give their right arm?
A lot.
A lot of players would. Yeah. Now, if you being involved in the broadcasting is affecting your game or whatever, your concentration or whatever that much, you wouldn't be reaching the semi-finals.
No, but I think there's another thing, and I said this in a press conference the other day, and I'm sure this will rear its head again, but this is going to be my final word on it. And if I ever talk about it again, it will only be to reiterate this point I'm about to make. I've been playing snooker since I was 8. I've been a professional snooker player since I was 15. That's now a lot more years than I'd like to give you credit for. If I felt that working for the BBC during the Triple Crown events affected my professional performance in any way, I wouldn't be doing it.
Yep.
I've been honest and upfront about the fact that I feel, personally, it's actually made me a better snooker player. It's improved my game no end. It's made me more of a complete player. And it's, you know, obviously paving the way for what I hope will be a successful, you know, career in broadcasting once I move away from being able to win snooker tournaments.
It's funny, I interviewed you yesterday after your 4-0 win over John Higgins here at the World Grand Prix, which we'll talk about in a moment. And you alluded to that in your interview yesterday. You said that during your punditry and your commentary, as well as analysing other players as you do in that role, you were analysing your own game at the same time. So you're actually using that role to analyse your own game to help develop it. And then yesterday you beat John Higgins 4-0, and I think he hardly got a shot apart from the second when the frame was already done.
As the professional, and this is going to ruffle some feathers, as the professional player, I will have to pull rank on this particular subject. If I felt it was detrimental to me in any way, I wouldn't be doing it. That's it.
Yep.
It is no more complicated than that. And to be honest, if I troll through all of my timelines on social media, the vast majority of interactions I have with people on this topic are positive. Most people actually really enjoy that a current player, top player, is giving, you know, inside information, you know, what it's like from the chair, what it's like playing on these tables, and giving that information live during play. Most people like that.
Yep.
Times have changed. Times have moved on. If you don't like it, you'll have to deal with it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Actually, on that subject, I thought Jack Lazowski was great after he went out, after you knocked him out, actually, and then he went into the punditry role. I thought Jack was really good, actually. He was quite refreshing as well to have on there, which was good. There you go. I think we've dealt with that. I think that's put to bed. So there you go. So Sean reached the semi-finals. Ronnie went on to win it, but not without controversy. Goodness me. Ali Carter in the final with him. Ali having a great season.
So Ronnie O'Sullivan and controversy.
I know.
Now, those two words don't go together.
Who'd have thunk it?
That's ridiculous.
Who'd have thunk
it? That's an outrageous claim.
Now, Ronnie and Ali, they've got a bit of history. It's fair to say, Bargegate at the Crucible. They don't like each other very much. It did get a little bit much. It's fair to say. The post-match press conference, we have a rule on our podcast that we don't use foul language, so we won't repeat what he said. It got a bit nasty, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, it did. There's no two ways about it. You know, neither of us were there. We weren't in the press conference.
Yep.
I thought the press conference immediately, you know, the trophy presentation with Rob Walker interviewing both players was a little bit that was a bit testy. That had a bit of needle in it as well. You know, some said it was unnecessary, some enjoyed it. And then apparently, you know, when they were both players doing their press backstage, because the logistics of it, there's only one press room, and I think O'Sullivan was in one of the TV studios, probably Eurosport, BBC having gone off air. He's in that TV studio doing his live interview post-match. Meanwhile, Ali's in the press room doing his, you know, written press. And once he's finished, Ronnie comes in to do his. Words were exchanged. Things were, you know, accusations were made. The rebuttal from O'Sullivan was severe. And, of course, since then, Ali's had his right of reply here at the World Grand Prix. And it doesn't seem as if there's an end to it, you know, in sight.
No, it doesn't.
Here's my question for you.
Go on.
Their personal dislike for each other aside, which, you know, bearing in mind there's probably 130-odd pros on tour, all the staff, all the refs, tournament. There's probably close to 250 people on the snooker roadshow any one week. If you were in an office that size, you wouldn't get on with everybody. So these two players rubbing up against each other isn't unusual. Is it good for snooker or is it bad for snooker?
Right. Well, there's an old saying that any publicity is good publicity.
Do you believe that?
To an extent, yes. It's put snooker on the front pages in some instances. It's a bit unseemly. I'm not a fan of that kind of thing, if I'm honest. But it is publicity. It's taking the sport of snooker to new eyes. And if people see it and maybe show a bit of an interest and then watch some of this week, some of the World Grand Prix on ITV4 this week, then fair enough. Sort of happy days. It brings, you know, people to the sport. Certainly gets people talking. I think there's better ways to do it, personally. I think there's other ways to do it, but
it's no different though from a you know, if you take boxing as an example, or you know, what's the one, the UFC that,
yeah, Conor, MMA,
Conor McGregor, and all, you know, they're down talking their opponents all the time, aren't they? They're the pre-fight weigh-ins and all of that stuff. Now, a lot of those fights, you know, it's contrived. You know, it is just to drum up interest in box office sales and ticket sales. We know that,
but they are then going to get in either a ring or a cage and knock seven bells out of each other. So what you're saying is, Ali and Ronnie should get it on. We should stick them in a ring with gloves on and just let them fight it out. What do you think? Who'd win?
That's not what I'm saying.
Go on, who'd win, Sean?
That's not what I'm
Ronnie
saying.
Ronnie against Ali in the ring, who would win?
Yeah, do you know what? I think it'd be closer than people might think. I think both would give as good as they get.
I think they would, you know.
I think both would give as good as they get.
Ronnie's very physically fit. Ali's very fit. Ali, it'd be a good fight, that,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, no, yeah, no. Is the British Boxing Board of Control on the line? Well, can we get their license? No, I was just genuinely, though, like, you know those other sports that have that kind of pre-match, you know, going to get it, you're getting it, you're this, you're, all of that stuff. Do we, now snooker's obviously got the gentlemanly roots and it's this, and we wear dress suits and all this, and it, you know, wouldn't fit to be so, you know, disparaging. But are we missing out on publicity and excitement and you know, the casual watcher who tunes into these fights just to see if, you know, Tyson Fury can fulfil what he said he was going to do? They're not necessarily boxing fans. Are we missing out on that?
I don't know. Elliot Slesser and Matt Selt have been trying to bring this in for years, haven't they? Slesser and Matt have been trying to bring this in for ages, but I don't think it's,
I'm not
snooker,
against
it.
I have to say, I'm not against it. I'm not against it at all. I think it, that's the way the world's gone. I think it is the way the world's gone. I think Alex Higgins almost started it in snooker. His rivalry with Steve Davis wasn't rehearsed. That wasn't pretend. They didn't like each other, and people used to tune in their millions to watch them fight it out on the table.
So what do you think then? Table? Lancashire there.
I cocker, right.
But what do you think? What do you think out there, the listeners to the podcast? Should there be more trash talking? Should we be building these rivalries up? At 147 pod across all forms of social media, let us know. What do you think? Go on then, who'd win? Straight fight, Ronnie versus Ali.
Straight fight. What, Marcus of Queensbury rules?
Marcus of Queensbury rules, in the ring, gloves on, who wins, Ronnie O'Sullivan or Ali Carter?
I'm going to say O'Sullivan on pure height advantage and potentially reach.
Yeah, do you know what? I think Ali would be horrible to fight. I don't think he'd stop. I don't think he'd leave you alone. I think he'd be niggly. I'm going Carter. So there you go. What do you think? Ronnie or Ali, who would win? Sean's going Ronnie O'Sullivan. I'm going Ali Carter. I think it'd be a good fight, though, either way. Going back in the tournament then. So Ronnie won his eighth Masters, and hats off to him as well. What an achievement. You know, 8-8 and 7 now. 8 UKs, 8 Masters, 7 Worlds. He's got to go for 888, isn't he? He's got to go with the 3-8s at some point, you would think. Whether it's this year or not, I don't know. But going back, he made some comments about the venue, about the Ali Pali. I think he said it was dirty, there was bins everywhere, different things. Some of his criticisms of venues I sort of get. Some of them, K2 in Crawley was one, there was a swimming pool there, you could smell the swimming pool everywhere in the venue. You can't complain at the Ali Pali, surely. It's iconic. It's an amazing venue, Sean.
It is an amazing venue. It is iconic. It's one of our, you know, historical heritage sites in the UK. It's obviously, I think I'm right in saying it's, you know, the original site of the first BBC antenna, the one that's there.
Perhaps that's correct.
That perhaps isn't the one that was there all those years ago, but the old, we're coming to you live from London, it's Pathé News. That was where it was broadcast from. So it's, you know, it's an historical place. There were elements of his criticisms that were correct. There is no getting around that. I'm choose my words carefully, but I think, you know, some of what he said was fair.
Yeah.
Logistically, I'm looking at it, you know, with my WPBSA Players board member hat on, trying to make things better for players.
Yeah.
Logistically, the building set out completely wrongly for a snooker tournament, in my opinion. You know, the punters won't know this, but when we arrive on site, we arrive in one of the backyards. It's obviously security to get in. You come up some stairs and there's a guest lounge there. That's where you get your security passes. The first place you walk into is like the media room. The players' lounge is, you know, a good par three away.
Yeah.
The dressing rooms are a par four in the other direction.
You've got to take everything back to golf, haven't you?
But you know, just
I know what you mean, though. Yeah,
true sports fans, not like you, Phil. True sports fans will understand my analogies. What I'm trying to say is, things are in the wrong place.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not an easy venue to navigate. It's definitely a fan first culture.
Yep.
At the Ali Pali, which of course has its merits. But from a player's point of view, trying to go out and win a snooker tournament, things are in the wrong place. And hopefully, you know, with a new operations team at World WST, hopefully that's something as WPBSA players, we can work together with them to improve that. And so some of his criticisms did carry weight. Of course, when the most popular player and the most read about player and written about player of all time makes such disparaging comments about one of our biggest partners, it doesn't help us as a sport.
Yeah, yeah.
Doesn't help us commercially, and that's where I would suggest that, you know, not all publicity is good publicity.
Yeah,
the people who run Alexandra Palace won't be too happy about his comments.
No, and rightly so. It's funny. I saw the comments, and I went to Ali Pali last year. I think the venue's amazing. As a fan, I went as a fan, and I take your point on board that things maybe aren't in the right place because it's not designed for that, is it? And everything else, as a fan, it was fantastic. It was a great place to go. You know, the whole place was wonderful. I thought it was superb. I liken it, in boxing, there's a place called York Hall in Bethnal Green. Now, York Hall in Bethnal Green is sort of the spiritual home of boxing in a lot of people's views. Very traditional, very, very old school. There's like a balcony that runs around the top. It's quite small, it's quite tight, but it is this spiritual home of boxing. The place is a dump. It's an absolute dump. You get backstage, it's horrific. It's falling to bits. But it's the York Hall Bethnal Green. It's the spiritual home boxing. The Alexandra Palace, yes, it's not ideal. Yes, it's got its faults. It is now the home of the Masters. Yes, I know it used to be at Wembley Conference Centre and everything else. I can't see that moving from Ali Pali. I think it's that venue now is synonymous with that tournament, and rightly so. The pictures all look fantastic. As you said, some criticism like that really is unhelpful at times. But if it does highlight it, and then it sort of brings it more to the front with the likes of yourself and Matt working with the WPBSA players with World Snooker Tour, if it kind of highlights it and brings it to the forefront so you guys can do some work to make that better, is that a good thing?
It is a good thing, but that horse has bolted.
Yeah.
I think, you know, for anyone wondering how the system works, voicing these things in the public arena isn't the way to go. You know, coming to the players' board, bringing these things to our attention, putting pen to paper and actually trying to help make the game better, keeping it in-house, is how these things go. I know everyone wants to sit in a press conference and run their mouth off. It's not the way to do it. We've ways and means in place. We've processes in place to deal with all of these player issues. And I say it all the time: if any players have got issues with anything, write to us, come to us, seek us out. You know, we've got the players board there. Come to us.
There's events every other week at the moment. Help, you're all there. It's
like, help make the game better.
Yeah.
Shooting your mouth off in a press conference and slagging off a venue doesn't help us at all commercially. We could really do with, you know, all of these players, not just O'Sullivan. He's not the only person who does things like this. We could do with everybody trying to come together and where you've got things you think can help make the game better, do it in-house. Let us do it properly, professionally, and make the game better for everyone.
Fantastic. So there you go. That was the Masters. The Masters was fantastic. It was brilliant. As a televisual spectacular, a snook spectacular, it was fantastic. I'm not going to talk about bugs. I think that's really boring now. It's tedious. They're there every year. Okay, full stop. End of.
I'm going to wear a full beekeeper's suit next year.
You would as well.
Honestly, I know you don't want to talk about it. It is ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, but it's boring. They're there. They're there. They're going to be there next year. They're going to be there the year after. They're always going to be there, okay? It's one of those things. Right, we're going to take a very, very short break, and we'll be back after this.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to the 147 podcast with Sean Murphy and Phil Seymour. If you like what you're listening to, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to interact with us across all forms of social media at 147pod. That's the words at 147pod. And just like that, we are back. So, since we were last on a podcast, World Snook Tour have launched their new, very long-awaited website. And it's good.
Shock horror.
Yeah. The live scoring's brilliant. Something people have messaged us with for so long. They need to sort the live scoring.
Do we have a post box?
No. It's great. I really like it. Now, there's been a few people messaging, if you translate the website into Arabic, Kieran Wilson's down as the cow or something. I don't know. Come on. Yeah. No, seriously. I think that is really splitting hairs. The new website is good.
The new website from WST is good. You heard it here first. I must admit, right, I'd started to lose a bit of faith.
Yeah.
I'd started to think, will it ever come? Yeah, it's coming in autumn. It's coming at the UK's. I think it was worth the wait.
It was.
I think it's absolutely brilliant.
The live scoring's fantastic. The stats that are on there and everything, the way everything's laid out, the rankings. I listened to Dave Hendon. He doesn't like the font. I don't like the font either. I don't think the font's great. But the whole look of it.
Jeez, you just couldn't leave it, could you?
It's glossy. It's shiny. The live scoring, it moves. It's interactive. It's brilliant.
What does your name come up as? You know, if we translate your name into something and then back again, what does it come up as on the website?
I dread to think. But look, you know, every website has the odd teething issue, okay? And this will be no different. Over the next few months, there'll be a few things come up. I'm quite sure that they'll have to change. They'll have to alter, have to amend. But the new website is really good. If you've not seen it yet, wst.tv. They might not promote us, Sean, but we'll promote them.
Talking of promoting, how have we ended up in this situation where this coming Friday, we're recording this halfway through the World Grand Prix, next Friday,
yes,
the 26th of January. So if you're listening to this backdated in November 2028, you've missed it.
This is true.
But in about 10 days' time, the 26th of January, you and I are doing our first exhibition show together in Mansfield. How has that happened?
I know, it's mad, isn't it?
I've tried so hard to avoid
working. Yeah, as I have with you, I've worked with all the big names, you know, and now I've got down to you, which...
I don't like the way this conversation is going.
It'll be a great night, that, actually. Tony Morgan of ABC Snooker Exhibitions, who listens to the podcast. So hello, Tony, and your wonderful family down there in Mansfield. Tony's putting this on. It's in Mansfield, 26th of January. I think there's about 10 tickets left.
Yeah, last check, there was a couple of tickets
there's
left.
There's about 10 tickets left. So hit up ABC Snooker Exhibitions on Facebook or Twitter or wherever and grab those tickets. It is our first ever exhibition together. So I'll rip you.
Well, it could very well be our last.
It could.
So for those lucky ticket holders, you're going to see the one and only time we'll ever work together.
This is very true. Yeah.
But listen, you know, you've worked with pretty much everyone else, haven't you? It's about time you worked with the best exhibition exhibitor. Is that even a phrase? I don't know.
Exhibition exhibitor.
No, that's the wrong way to say it. You know what I mean.
Yeah. Listen, it'll be a laugh. Okay. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's always a good crowd in Mansfield. I've done quite a few down there. Always a good crowd. It will certainly be a laugh. So yeah, ABC Snooker Exhibitions. If you've not got your tickets yet, there's about 10 left. Get yourselves there. We will have a good laugh. Now, you just mentioned it, Sean. We are day 3 today of the Spreadex World Grand Prix here in Leicester. The first part of the Players' Series. Now, Mark Allen holds this title. You hold the other two. Great performance yesterday against John Higgins.
Thank you.
4-0. Was it a 1-4-5 in the first frame?
Opened up with a 1-4-5, yeah.
Not bad.
I
gave you about a 6.5 out of 10 when he came in the press room afterwards. It was a good performance against a legend of the sport in John. You do hold the other two titles. I know it's a different season. What would it mean to you to hold all three if you won it this week?
Well, what would make it more special is, I mean, I've won the World Grand Prix before. It's a beautiful trophy.
Yeah.
But to take it off Mark Allen.
How did I know? He's playing Jack Lizowski today as well. What a great game that could be.
Well, it'll be a quick death.
It will be a quick, yeah, for whichever one the loses, one it will be a quick death.
To take the trophy off Mark, I mean, it will need a deep clean. It would need to be decontaminated. But it would be a real, you know, feather in the cap to take it off Mark. Just to, you know, so I could send him that picture of it in, you know, that, yeah, I'd like that.
Talking very seriously for a second, the Players' Series, so we've got the World Grand Prix, then the Players' Championship, then the Tour Championship, Players in Telford, Tour in Manchester this year. Top 32 in the world this week, top 16 in the Players, top 12 now, not top 8 in the Tour. You've not yet qualified for those other two. That's on a one-year list, not the world rankings. You've not yet qualified for the other two, which you're going to be defending in. Do you feel the pressure? Do you feel the pressure's on sort of here? I think you've got here, the German and the Welsh, I think, to amass ranking points to qualify. Do you feel that? Does that weigh?
Yeah, 100%. I won the inaugural Players' Championship in Dublin about 13 years ago or whatever it was and didn't qualify the following year. Was defending champion. I think it was the first or second time in the history of the game a defending champion wasn't present to defend their title the following season. Obviously, because you have to re-qualify, you don't get in by rights.
Oh, this happened the other year though to Neil Robertson, didn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, 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 yeah. And it's unpleasant. You know, it's not nice to sit at home and to watch everyone defend your title, take your title. You're not there to defend it.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, the argument is you've had all year to defend it. You've had all year to get in. You've had the same opportunity to amass points as everyone else. And so from that point of view, I've got three events left to secure my place in those players. Well, certainly in the Players anyway. It's very hard to get into the Tour champs if you're not in the Players champs.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's hard to get in Players if you're not in this tournament. So, you know, I've come here off good form from the Masters, full of confidence, although I lost in the semis. It was a good run. I feel like I played nicely against John. And I'm looking forward to going again tonight. You know, I do feel the pressure of trying to get in those events. Absolutely. I'm about 20 grand off, I think, the cutoff.
Okay.
About £20,000 points from getting in the 16 on the one-year list, which would get me in the Players' Champs. And as you say, I've got this event, the German Masters, and the Welsh Open to try and get me in there. I would hope that I'll be okay.
Yeah.
But there are no guarantees. It'd be lovely to do well in this tournament this week and just tick both boxes. That would be fantastic.
It's funny, there's some big names missing this week, isn't there? I mean, Neil Robertson, Kyron Wilson, Luca Brissell, the world champion. Because it's on the one-year list, just he's not performed this season. He's not got the ranking points needed to get into this. I think a win at the German Masters would probably qualify most players for the Players, I think, for the Players' Championship. So there's still opportunities there, but this is that time of the season where it's a bit of a snowball effect, isn't it? And if your snowball isn't rolling and growing, you miss out. Like, you know, people have said, if it's very difficult if you're not in the World Grand Prix to get into the players. If you're not in the players, it's very difficult to get into the tour because these are the events where you do. But you've just alluded to it there. The players that aren't only have themselves to blame, don't they? It's not, you know, everyone's got the opportunity. At the start of the season, everyone starts on zero on that one-year list. Everyone starts at the same place. It's then down to them to grow their ranking points and qualify, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. That's one of the things I like about it, this player series. You know, everyone has the same opportunity to get into it at the end of the season. It's not based on what you did a year ago. It's based on what you do this season. And that's how sport should be, shouldn't it?
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know, you get your rewards for what you've done in the past, but it's about what you do today. I think the World Grand Prix and the Players' Champs and the Tour Choice, I think they've been great additions to the tour. And from my interactions with, I think everyone thinks they're great tournaments. As I say, it'd be really nice to, you know, do some damage this week and just release that pressure valve a little bit, you know.
It's funny, I used to do the Players' Series and I haven't for the last couple of years. I got the phone call just before Christmas actually to come and do this. To do the Spreadex World Grand Prix. I'm not doing the players on the tour, but thanks to everyone that's sent me messages saying it's nice to see you back on ITV. It's a real pleasure, to be honest. It's I love this event. I think it's great. And if you're at a loose end, tickets are available. wst.tv/tickets. Come down this week. Sean's here. Mark Allen's here. Ronnie O'Sullivan's here. Mark Williams is here. You know, the big names are here. It's going to be a great week of snooker at the Morningside Arena in Leicester. If you can't get here, it's all live on ITV4 or ITV all week, up until Sunday when we'll have the final. It's all live on there. It's free to air, so fill your boots. Hope you're enjoying it at home so far. We're certainly enjoying being here. But if you can get to Leicester this week, come to Leicester and actually watch it live, because there is nothing better than actually being in there and watching it. You play again tonight. You play Cao Yupeng tonight. He beat Barry Hawkins yesterday. And this tournament rolls on and on and on. So enjoy the World Grand Prix this week. Right then, Sean, have you got a rant for me this week?
I have got a rant. And before we go into it, you've just said something that's reminded me of another potential rant, which I'm going to just mention. Why do we call it free-to-air telly? People say that all the time.
Well,
because we all pay a TV license.
Yeah, technically.
So it's not free.
No, technically ITV is. Because you can... Technically, you can have the BBC channels removed from your television and then you can watch ITV completely free of charge.
Didn't know that.
Yeah.
Move on.
I think you can like write a declaration that you won't use any BBC services.
Really?
Yeah, you can. People have done it and challenged it and it didn't run.
Didn't know that.
So yeah, there you go. It was interesting. I had an interaction with a snooker player over the Christmas period. They're talking about the darts getting such massive viewing figures. And I won't name them because I'm not like that. And they said, this is why snooker needs to be on Sky to get these big figures. Not realising that snooker's potential, Sky Sports rather, potential viewership is tiny compared to the BBC, ITV and even Eurosport as well. You know, their potential viewing figures are astronomical compared to what Sky can do because Sky is a subscription service, whereas everybody has got BBC and ITV. So... it's one of those strange things. But yeah, no, it is free to air. So there you go. Right. Sean Murphy, you have 1 minute and 47 seconds from the moment I say rant to the sound of the klaxon. Sean, are you ready?
I'm ready.
This is Sean's rant. 3, 2, 1, rant.
Right. We are mid-tournament, as we've said a few times. So I'm trying to stay zen, right? I'm trying to stay chilled out. I don't want to go over the top and boil over. And I've done a few hotel-based rants in the past, you know, because I spend so much time on the road. So anyone listening to this who travels, who spends time in hotels, will know what I'm talking about. I've ranted about plug sockets and all the rest of it. This one is about rude, noisy hotel corridor walkers.
Talking about Robbie Murphy here.
What is wrong with you? These people walk up and down these corridors at unearthly times, banging, shouting, screaming, running after kids, banging on doors. Sophie, don't do this. What are you doing? Don't come back. You're not at home. People are trying to sleep. You rude, selfish, ignorant. Put the beep noise in. I'm absolutely sick of it. And this can be very, very closely linked to housekeeping who knock on the door far too early. Surely anything before 9 a.m. is just not allowed. So people walking up and down hotel corridors, yeah, you've been in the hotel bar, you've enjoyed a couple of nightcaps, don't be walking down the corridor shouting and screaming, waking everyone up. Everyone just thinks you're a dick. Don't be walking down the corridor in the morning to your breakfast meeting. Yeah, you're up. Nobody else wants to be up. You're going down pretending, you know, you think you're a super salesman. You're walking down the corridor for your important meeting. Just be quiet. Have a bit of decorum.
Okay. Your rants always raise a question. This week's question is, who's Sophie and what has she done?
I don't know, but somebody was running after her at pace. Be quiet.
It begs that question, Sean. It really does.
Be quiet.
I'm with you. I'm with you 100%. I was in Scotland last week. I woke up about 1:30. 1:30 in the morning by people walking down the corridor talking very loudly. Clearly, they'd had a few drinks. We've all had a few drinks.
We've all been there, like.
It's like, come on. No, I'm with you. I'm with you completely on this one.
What's wrong with people?
I don't know. I don't know. There's signs all over hotels now as well that say, you know, people are asleep, be quiet.
Yeah, but people don't read signs. I very nearly pulled a man last night.
Sorry? Just rephrase. You very nearly pulled a man last night.
I very nearly questioned a man
last
night.
This is a window into the world of Sean Murphy on tour.
There was a man who walked back into the hotel last night. And outside the front of this hotel is a smoking area about 30 yards from the main door. I don't know how the smoke knows to stay down there, but you know, it does. And stood by the door, it's like a slidey door into the front of the hotel. There's a big sign, no smoking here. Stood next to it was, I mean, this guy must live under a bridge. Stood there smoking. It took everything I had not to say. Is this serious? And the whole reception area smelt of his disgusting cigarette. I don't want to walk through it to walk into the hotel. What's wrong with people?
So at least the smoking area, the official smoking area, is further away. A lot of them aren't, are they? And to get in and out of places, pubs and hotels, you do have to walk through. Like, it's grim.
You don't realise it, do you? Know, like when you used to be able to smoke indoors.
Yeah.
We all used to smell like that.
I had a friend who worked in McDonald's years ago when the smoking ban came in, and he was a smoker. And the smoking ban came in, and he found that he was spending a lot more money on cigarettes because he wasn't getting the passive smoke at work that he used to get walking around McDonald's doing his job because people used to smoke in McDonald's. And it's strange, isn't it? But no, I'm with you. So what do you think out there in podcast land? People making too much noise walking around in hotels. I still want to know what Sophie had done. And we need to investigate the fact that you nearly pulled a man last night. But anyway, moving on very, very swiftly.
That's not what I said.
To our listener questions, we have about 10 minutes left. So we'll squeeze as many of these in as we can. Thank you for sending them in at 147pod across social media. One person who's done that is Nathan Woodward on Facebook. He's asked the question, what are both of your favourite achievements?
Goodness.
Well, yours should be pretty easy, I'd have thought.
Go on, what's yours? You don't say anything super cheesy like your children or, you know.
Well, I'm not going to say
don't
that.
Say stuff I'm not going like to say that. You know when people go, what's your best achievement? You go, oh, my kids. Get lost.
I don't think having...
Give us a real answer.
I don't think having kids is an achievement, personally.
It is the way you do it.
Wow. I set a goal of announcing a boxing world title fight. And I hit that goal. I set a 5-year goal, did it in 2.5 years. That for me is one of my favourite achievements. It was a great thing to do. I've done several since, and it's always special. It's always a special thing to do. You know, as someone who, I've got a very strange career, got a very strange job, I suppose, really. And I think in every
glad you said it.
Yeah, in every job, everyone has like achievements, don't they? But that was probably my favourite one was the fact that I set the goal to do that and I did it. And I was very chuffed for myself. So,
yeah, very good.
Yeah, that one. So it's got to be the world's for you, surely.
Yeah, I do get asked this question a lot. And I think, you know, it probably is the World Championship.
Yeah.
But to some degree, I feel like I've had my career backwards. You know, you're supposed to come on tour, win a few smaller events, win a lower scale event and climb the ladder and eventually find yourself winning a big tournament. I kind of did that backwards. And
You've won that and then done nothing since.
You know, I won the biggest of them all and just been winning small tournaments since. I've had my life completely backwards.
Small tournaments like the UK and the Masters, you know what I mean? Just little ones like that.
I wish I could remember more about the world title win, to be honest. It's so long ago, yeah. And it was such an attack on the senses. As you know, I was only 22. I don't remember a great deal of it. There's an argument to be made, but that winning the Masters and completing the Triple Crown set, more just because of the, you know, the amount of questions that came around with it. Any player who's on two out of the three, like Ding, for instance,
yeah,
or Stuart Bingham, or you know, there are others as well. They're just getting ploughed with that question all the time. Yeah. Every time they get to the tournament they need to complete that set, it's just all they get asked, and it does become draining. So to win the Masters in 15 and complete my set was almost as good. But I suppose, yeah, it has to be winning the World Championship.
I'm going to put myself in your shoes for a second, which would be quite uncomfortable because I think you've got slightly smaller feet than me. But I'm going to put myself in your shoes for a second. If I was you, I would say the Triple Crown. I would say winning all three, because I'm going to say anyone could win the World Championship. That's not strictly true, is it? But it's a tournament. It's a tournament. It's one tournament in isolation. And
I suppose anyone can pop up and win any event.
Someone can have an amazing couple of weeks and win the world, okay? Not anyone can win the world and the UK and the Masters. You know, I know certain people, Dave Hendon, hates the term Triple Crown, okay, but they are the majors, all right. They are the three major tournaments.
But I do get Dave's point about that.
Yeah,
just to sideline into that, I do get his point about that, because they were never called the Triple Crown.
No, it's been forged, hasn't it? It's been sort of created, yeah. But they're the majors, okay. They're the three majors. For me, that is a much bigger achievement than winning the world. To win the big three is a much bigger achievement than just, he says in massive inverted commas, winning the world. Because it just is. There's far fewer people will ever do that than will win the world.
Fair.
So I would have said that if I was you, but I'm not. So fair comment.
Anyway. Right, Andrew De Jong on Facebook says, do you think it'll be possible to have a tournament in the Netherlands?
I'd guess it's De Jong as opposed to De Jong. So let's get the name right.
Why are you assuming that?
Because they're probably from the Netherlands. And
it's massive assumption, isn't it?
J is pronounced as a Y.
It's a huge assumption.
De Jong.
It's a huge assumption.
Will it be possible to have a tournament in the Netherlands? Simple answer, yes.
Absolutely. No reason why not.
I think in the next 10 years, my prediction, the next 10 to 15 years, there's going to be a whole host of countries that have never hosted ranking events before will host ranking events.
I hope you're right.
The likes of Belgium, the likes of Holland, the likes of Spain, the likes of the Middle East, Saudi Arabia, and places like that. I think we're going to see, and it's a great thing for snooker if it does. It's a great thing for snooker if it does, and I really hope it does. But the simple answer is yes. Yeah, I think it will be possible. Whether it happens, I don't know. I hope it does. So there you go. Okay, moving on. Mike Drumgold on Instagram. Is one of the biggest problems with snooker's image in the UK the fact that broadcasters, in particular the BBC, are obsessed with the past glory days of the sport? They should be building up the characters we have now instead of constantly rerunning footage of the 85 final, etc. Now, this was Mike Drumgold. We get quite a lot of messages on this exact topic. There's a lot of people think the same thing. Sean, what's your view?
I think, with respect, I would you know, disagree. I think, I disagree with partly of what Mike's saying. Absolutely, broadcasters should be, and I think do build up the characters of the modern game and the modern players, and, you know, there are aspects of that that do get covered. Of course, those players have to win.
Yeah,
they are that you can't promote somebody who's either not there or loses first round. They have to progress through tournaments, and I think in fairness that does happen when players have a run from the lower ranks. The other stuff I like a bit of nostalgia.
Yeah,
it's called heritage. Other sports would kill for it. They'd kill for that shot window on BBC and the big, you know, iconic heritage broadcasters. I like it.
I'm with you. I think you're absolutely right. what I think needs to happen is, I think the balance needs to shift from one to the other. I think the heritage, the history is absolutely crucial. And we have got it. And the 85 final is what got me in snooker. Okay, so, you know, I take that with a slight
pinch of salt. That's one of the most famous sporting events of all time.
But if the broadcasting currently is 70% the heritage, the history, and 30% the current, I think that needs to shift.
And is it?
I think it is. Yeah, yeah. I think it is a lot of time. I think predominantly, and Mike said this in his question, he said in particular the BBC, I'd agree with that.
But don't you like those, you know, like during the Masters this year, during the final interval, they had like the Masters moments.
Yeah.
And they look back through, it's the 50th year of the Masters. And so, don't you like all
I
that?
I love it. Absolutely love it. But like I said, if it's currently 60, 70% history and heritage and 30, 40% current, I think that needs to turn the other way. So it's 60, 70% current, 30, 40 history. And I'll tell you exactly why. I get sick and tired of people saying, oh, there's no characters in the game anymore. We had Jimmy White, we had Alex Higgins, we had Willie Thorne, we had X, Y, and Z. There's no characters in the game anymore. Absolute, categorically nonsense. And I am getting angry and waving my arm, Sean. I don't care.
You've got 1 minute and 47 seconds.
Stop, Phil. Stop. No, there are characters. There's great characters in our sport right now, okay? The problem is that is not portrayed. And that's not portrayed because certain broadcasters are too busy showing what happened in 1985, what happened in 1987, all this history and heritage, which is there and it is brilliant and it is important and everything else. But spend more time building up the stars of today because we've got great characters in this sport. We've got great characters. Some people see Judd Trump, right? Judd Trump dominated for a few years, yeah, a year or two ago, and he's still right up there at the top. You look at the number of century breaks he's had in his career. Yeah, he's an incredible snooker player. He's also a really great character if you open him up and actually get talking to him. The problem is a lot of the broadcasters are too busy showing all his history, all his heritage, to do that and to put him on a platform. I do think the likes of Big Break played a massive part in that then in building those characters up, and we haven't got that now. And if we had that now, I think that would make a massive difference. Now, ITV are bringing Bullseye back with Paddy McGuinness, who broke Question of Sport, but there you go. It's time. It's time for the BBC to bring back Big Break. That would then start this off.
I can tell you no more, except watch this space.
Oh. Oh, and Sean's just winked at me, which he talked about pulling a man earlier on. Now he's winking at me. He's actually quite worrying me now.
What I would say about this, about the characters and the nostalgia and yesteryear and all that, I think one of the things, though, that could improve, and this is nothing to do with broadcasters, I think players, we've all got social platforms.
Agreed.
I think as a generalisation, the output from most snooker players on their social channels is awful. I think most players could do a lot more to promote the game, what they're up to, and themselves, their own brand and their own images. I think they should all be doing a lot more. Most of their platforms are empty.
Yeah.
Most of the content that's on the other platforms is poor. I'm not suggesting mine's brilliant. But get more active, guys. Get on your socials. You've got your mobile device in your hand. You can broadcast to the planet. Get on them.
Yep.
You know, make yourself known. Imagine if Alex Higgins had had Instagram.
he wouldn't have had it for long.
I'll leave that one with you. I think Alex Higgins would have got shadow banned.
He would not have had it for long. Look, we're at the hour, so we're gonna have to cut the questions there. We've got a load more questions. We will roll them on to the next podcast. Gary Burns, Steve Hassett, Clive Matthews, James Beard, GCHQ 98. We will roll your questions on to the next podcast, I promise. If you have got a question, please get it through to us at 147pod across all forms of social media. Just a pointless question then, Sean. Already mentioned I am doing Dry January. The pointless question is, if you were only allowed one specific alcoholic drink for the rest of your life, what drink would you choose?
Oh, I can already sense the judgment from everybody.
Go on.
Because everyone's got a favourite, haven't they?
Everyone's got a favourite, absolutely, have you?
Yeah. I'll tell you, if I could ban one alcoholic drink from the world, which I know is not the question.
Yep.
But it would be Bailey's.
Bailey's?
Bailey's is of the devil.
Oh, it's Christmas though, isn't it?
Bailey's is horrific.
But you hate Christmas, don't it's you? Because you are the
Grinch. Ban a lot of it.
Oh, really?
What drink would I have for the rest of my life? Aspel cider.
Aspel cider?
Love it.
Wow.
You?
You're going to hate me. I'm going with a cocktail.
Oh, my God. I didn't realise I was doing the podcast with Del Boy.
I'm going, yeah, no umbrellas needed. I'm going with a cocktail. I'm going with a Lynchburg lemonade, which is my favourite cocktail, which is Jack Daniels, triple sec, bitters, lime juice, lemon juice, and lemonade.
Goodness me.
Long drink, and it's beautiful.
That'll be room service with your cocktail.
If only it was. And do you know what? I wouldn't be able to drink it because it's dry January. What would you choose? What would be your alcoholic drink of choice if you were only allowed one for the rest of your life? We will be here in Leicester all week. We'll be in Mansfield a week on Friday with ABC Snooker Exhibitions. If you are coming to Leicester this week, come and say hello. I'll be wandering around. Sean will be here as
I'm
well.
Here for at least another day.
At least one more day. Sean, good luck this evening.
Thank you.
And for the rest of the week with your match and your quest to try and wrestle the World Grand Prix trophy from Mark Allen's cold dead hands.
At the end of the week. What is a good cleaning agent for silver? What's a good decontaminant?
Absolutely no idea, but I'm sure someone does know.
Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed the podcast. Don't forget to vote for us in the Sports Podcast Awards. But for now, it's a very goodbye from me.
And it's a goodbye from him.
We hope you've enjoyed it. Take care, everyone. That was the 147 podcast with Sean Murphy and Phil Seymour. If you enjoyed what you've just listened to, make sure you subscribe, leave us a review, and interact with us across all forms of social media at 147pod. That's all words at 147pod. Thanks for listening.